Well, Gene Shepherd time. This one. I can't find any of those Spring Madness shows. I know I've got them, but so instead of that, we're going to turn the clock way ahead to very near the end of the FM era. So sometime in August of 1966. And some programs that are so deep in the archives and I haven't heard them yet. Here's another one that we'll all enjoy for the first time together. Unless, of course, you were listening back on June 21st, 1966. It's called, well, Rudy. Rudy called this one Inside Radio. So we'll see how close he is to the mark on this. Of course, when it comes to naming a Shepherd show, many elements to choose from. It's hard to zero in on anything, but, you know, when it comes to my taste in music and Shepherds, there's one thing we agree on. Bring it up big. Bring it up big. Here's Gene Shepherd.
Yes. What a gullible mopper. Bring it up big. Come on, hit it hard. And I'm glad you've come along with us this morning.
I'm forever blowing bubbles.
Mrs., wait just a moment here while I light up this cigar. And this great sound, listen. Yeah, kapowie.
The pretty bubbles in the air.
I sniff a good cigar. Nothing like smelling a good cigar. Hold on a minute there. Kapowie. Who was it who said, a woman is just a woman, but a good cigar is a good cigar? Who was it who said that, huh? It was not Earl Wilson. I'm forever blowing. Oh, how about this for a magnificent moment in the life and times of mankind itself? Would you please bring me on magnificent moment music? Oh, bring it on a big. Now, I require you to allow your mind, if I am so presumptuous as to admit that you've got one, allow your mind to run free and picture this scene, if you will, please. A group of young men with a television camera showed up at a housing project in a London suburb and said that they wanted to make a TV commercial for beans. They called 74 British housewives into marching around a recreational area. All 74 of them marched around with posters shouting, "Beans! Beans! Beans! Beans!" at the top of their voices. Then the young men left, saying that the scene was being shot from a distant roof. The women marched and shouted, "Beans! Beans! Beans!" for 2 hours and 12 minutes before learning that it was a hoax by college students. Oh, what a great scene. One woman said, "I think it was hilarious." Another one said, "I don't." All right, that's enough of that. And a Gollum Mopri. What a great scene. You know, it's a fact. You know, the people all say they hate commercials. And yet, I'll guarantee you, the easiest way you can get somebody to make an absolute idiotic ass of himself any place is to show up with a camera and tell him you're shooting a commercial for anything.
They'll immediately say, how many of these commercials have you seen where this lady, this housewife, when it talks through her nose? She says, well, yes, I used to get headaches all the time. You know, the kind that go, then just throb on the top of my head. Well, I took headache out just once. And, well, you know, it just makes things, it just goes away so quick. It goes away. You know, it's just so simple. I remember one, did I tell you about the terrible time that I once was involved, well, I was involved in a real bit of hoaxery one time. They called in a lot of ladies in Cincinnati. Did I ever tell you that story, Lee? Well, I was working one time at a radio station. I'll tell you one thing that I've noticed, a great change that's come about in the radio and television business. And I say this as a professional. I think at this stage in my career, I have earned the right to call myself a pro by now. Don't you think? Do you think so? Well, of course, that's true. I'm here at this station, so maybe that's true. I've often threatened to get in the radio. However, seriously, though, I can report one thing I have noticed, tremendous change that's come about in this industry, and it's happened subtly. And that is the loss of the sense of humor that this business used to have. Do you know what I mean? You know what I'm saying? And a sense of involvement with what it's doing. Television stations particularly have become very serious. Oh, they really believe they have a higher mission. And there's just no sense of humor about them. And they're all bureaucratized now. Oh, absolutely, completely. We have more people working around this station now who walk around very fast and raise their knees high and carry thin pieces of paper marked log. And they think that we're in the log business. And as far as the radio station itself is concerned, we are in the log business. And our job is to see that the log is properly filled out. What goes on between the notations on the log is of very little interest. It's that all these little lines, but oh, just a tremendous change has come about in this. And I suspect that this is true in almost every business. That as the business ceased to have, it's like what happens to countries. You know, I noticed this in Israel, that this was a new country, you know, Israel. Israel is, so new that it's painful. After all, they didn't set up the state of Israel until something like, was it 48, 47, 48, something like that. The country is absolutely brand spanking new, which means that everybody is still excited about it. You know, it's like a new suit. You're all excited. You really are involved in the darn thing. Or like a new car. You're really excited. Every time you go out and you get in the car, you're excited because it's a new car. And this may persist with this new car for maybe almost up to a year. And then gradually it becomes your car. And then ultimately it becomes that crummy piece of junk. And the next thing you know, you're looking around, you're yelling about it, and you're going out after another one. And this is the same thing that happens in countries. That a country, when it's new, is exciting to the people who are in it. They're proud of it. Really are proud of it. Even the crummy stuff they're proud of. You know, I heard a guy in Israel say they were very proud now. And I said, what is it? You know, I thought he was going to point to the waterworks, you know, something like the new museum. He says, well, we have got now real juvenile delinquency, and we are very proud. That means that they've become a real nation now. You know, they got real problems. They got juvenile delinquency. So they're very proud of that. And I says, what else? He says, well, we have some very good traffic jams. I said, well, George, they are. Let's go out and watch some. And sure enough, they had a fantastic traffic jam while I watched right in the middle of Tel Aviv, and he was very proud of that. And we went and had some coffee in this Turkish joint. We're drinking Turkish coffee. And he says, and not only that, you know what we've got now? And I said, what? He says, we have an unemployment problem. I said, right, George, your guys are really coming along there. And pretty soon you're going to have protesters. And you're going to have a bunch of guys who are going to be marching around with signs saying, blow up the country, we hate it. You know, and then you'll know that you have entered the nation, the family of nations. You're really part of us. And I think all nations go through that scene. You know, they start out new and everything is swinging and great. And then gradually, and it must have been like that in this country about 1880, something like that. And you know, if you read any of the writings of about 1870, 1880, all the way through the 1800s from out of America, they were unbelievably chauvinistically patriotic. Oh, they constantly talked about the flag Teddy Roosevelt was an example of that. You know, they continually, oh, bully, by drive, well, the American spirit everywhere. And it was a product of a new country. People are nutty that way. You go to Israel, and the patriotism is almost embarrassing. You know, everywhere you look, they got little flags, and people are waving Israeli flags, and they're running around and hollering. Well, it's obvious that after a few years, it's going to change, you know, and they're going to get right back and say, you know, this place, and it goes through that transition. It's like a new girl. It's always fantastically exciting to a guy. He meets this chick, and no matter what it is, she can be a real bum, you know. But the fact is that she's new and interesting, and he's discovering new dimensions in bumship that makes it exciting. See, it's all new. Then after a while, he begins to get mad with all the underwear piled up in the corner of the pad, you know, and there's this caked mascara all over the sink and the john, and eventually, you know, come on. And it's through these periods of disillusionment. And I think that this is one of the things that I particularly enjoyed about Israel, was this feeling of newness. You know, it was a feeling of fantastic chauvinism. And it was kind of delightful to see a guy sitting in the middle of this crummy swamp in one place where I was up in the north, this crummy swamp, and sit there with a couple of little pipes sticking out of the ground. And they've got a little windmill over in the corner there. And he says, isn't this a magnificent land? I said, well, yeah, it is. And it's all in the eyes. And so... Of that unbelievable beholder. And I think the fact of the matter is that this little TV commercial bit is an example of that. The people, I've noticed in this business, the change come about. I remember when guys used to, they were really interested in their work, and a really, really tremendous interest in what they were doing, the show they were doing. Just being in the station, whether it was television or radio, just working with it. And there was the kind of involvement that people have with the theater. You know, if you've ever been around the theater, you know that these people are a little bit on the fanatical side. They their self-love is sickening in the theater. It's just incredible. And, everything that's in the theater is just great to anybody who's in the theater, even if it's absolutely ridiculous. If you're sitting in the third row and your head is asleep and your behind is itching, you know, and you're watching this terrible thing, it doesn't make any difference. You know that the people in the theater are saying, oh, my God, it's just such a wonderful... The caution of the director was out of his mind, and the writer is a ridiculous person, but it was just a wonderful experience to work with John, you know. And it's all that chauvinism. Well, radio and television has lost this. Do you know, have you noticed that? And it's lost it precipitously. Almost, it happened quickly, all of a sudden, a few years back. And no longer do you find the sense of humor, which, by the way, comes from that kind of involvement. Humor only comes from involvement. You can't be funny about something you don't care about. You can't be angry about something you don't care about. It's almost impossible to get anybody in a radio station today to really talk much about the business. They talk about new accounts. They'll talk about a new commercial. But you hardly ever hear anybody talk about what they heard on a show yesterday or what Charlie did on his show 2 weeks ago. You just don't hear this. It's just, and that would surprise people outside. You know, they think that not a bit of it. Absolutely not. And television, you see this, it's galloping in TV, as a matter of fact. I know one guy who's a television producer, as a matter of fact, who rarely sees the show he produces. Now, how do you like that scene? Yeah, because it's a sign of unhipness to watch the show. No, he doesn't watch it, you know. Well, anyway, I'm going to tell you the story about this thing that happened in Cincinnati. It was typical of that kind of humor that people used to have in this business. A few years ago, I was working in Cincinnati. So one of the guys got an idea for a gag. It was kind of a sadistic gag in a way. But he got an idea for a gag. And he decided that what he was going to do, on his show, he mentioned this, that they were looking for a group of ladies to come in and talk about a new product. And all the ladies who wanted to come in and talk about this new product should apply to write to him to the show. And he did it very seriously. See, he was very serious. This is a new product. We're trying this new thing. And we would like to have you write. So immediately he gets 48,000 letters from people who all, by the way, in their private conversations, I'm sure, over the bridge table, say how much they hate commercials. And he gets about 45,000 letters, and immediately he starts sorting them down until he picked out what he thought would be the 45 or the 50th most pompous ladies in the crowd. You know, people with three names that signed themselves. Gladys Ewing Carruthers II. So he got all these ladies, and he also picked it for the chicest neighborhoods. And the day came, and he sent them letters that they should all arrive. And the day came, and here these ladies were. They all arrived, and they had flower dresses and hats with the flowers on them, and little old ladies with the silver hair and distinguished-looking matrons. The place is filled with these ladies. We have the whole studio filled with them. And he went out, and he says, ladies, we'd like to welcome you here at the WKLUNCK. We'd like to welcome you here to Radio Whoopee. And that we have this new product, and the name of this product is Hot Biggity Dog. That this product is a product that you spread on your bread, and it just makes those sandwiches of yours go zingo. And it has a secret ingredient in it called Zowie. It's Zowie 7. And he goes on, he explains the product, see, and it's a non-existent product, by the way. He explains this whole thing to them. And he says, now, I want you ladies to just sit in this room here and talk about this new product, what you think of it, and the whole thing. Well, these ladies started to talk, and you have never seen more fawning in your life. They're in there talking about how much they love this new product and what a great thing it was and how the kids like it. 45 chickens sitting in there, and they began to get swept up in this thing. At first, they were inhibited, you know, until one says, well, I always use it after my cocktail hour. I just spread it on my salted almonds, and I say to George, well, by George, you should have seen this thing. It was fantastic. And they were piping it all over the station. They had the microphones on in there, see? And all over the station, the manager's, and he's busting a gut, and we had it piped. We were even piping it to other stations around town so they could hear what was going on in Studio 3. And these ladies gabbled on and on and on, and they began to get all carried away and were recording this thing. You have never heard anything like the sound of these ladies talking about a non-existent product. And then he came in after it was all over, and he says, ladies, thank you very much. We certainly appreciate your help, and we're going to give the findings of what we've done this afternoon to the manufacturer of this product, and you'll all be receiving a gift as you leave the station. And they all went out, and they gave them a promotional brochure. this was all part of the gag, see? And they gave him a promotional brochure on this guy's show. And listen to Smiley every day at 11. Smiley brings you the time, the news, the temperature, and he's great. And so they handed these promotional bits out to these ladies on the way out. And you should have seen them. Thank you very much. Would you please autograph this for me? Well, I'll tell you, it was one of the greatest practical jokes that I've ever seen in my life. And it's the kind of practical joke that nobody would do today. I saw one other practical joke pulled that was a fantastic. You want to hear about this practical joke immediately after the whoopies? Speaking of practical jokes, this is WOR AM and FM New York. Would you hit the little whoopie button?
Well, before we hit the whoopee button and practical jokes, you're listening to it recycled over WBAI New York FM only. Now back to Gene Shepherd from June 21st of 1966.
290 years the people of Cinzano make a fine vermouth. 290 years our people are making themselves a crazy, working day and night with no time and a half and no espresso breaks. All of this, so Cinzano, sweet of a mood, would add a little something to mix the drinks. And our people had to go and let a Frenchman make Cinzano dry vermouth because they knew in their tired, miserable hearts that the French grapes were dry. Oh, what the Italians didn't call our people for this. The names, the dirty words. 290 years. 290 years of making a fine vermouth, and what do you know about Cinzano? That we make ashtrays. Americans. That's not nice.
Imported by Shefflin & Co., New York.
Yeah, I'm forever bloating bubbles. Hey, did you ever get one of those Cinzano ashtrays? They are great. They are, you know. He talks. You know, I had a letter from somebody, and it's amazing how many people don't, I suppose, aren't well-traveled or anything. And that line has mystified a lot of people, the fact that Cinzano has ashtrays. You know, wherever you go in Europe, absolutely everywhere, any kind of little second-rate hotel or fancy restaurant, there's a Cinzano ashtray. You've seen it, haven't you? Well, you know, I was surprised to get letters from people who said, what are they talking about ashtrays? Where can I buy one of those ashtrays you're advertising? Wow. Speaking of ashtrays, let's see. Does warm weather give you a license to walk around in a wrinkled suit of pajamas? Let's face it. That's what some ready-made summer suits look like about halfway through the morning, about 10 minutes after you put the crummy things on. But if you take special pride in your fantastic appearance, then you'll want Woolmoth to make your summer suits to your measure for less than you pay for a ready-made suit taken off the gas pipe racks. Woolmoth lets you choose the styling that's right for you. In your choice of lightweight fabrics that include a distinguished group of hard-to-find chalk and pinstripes, in tropical worsteds and imported mohairs in a wide color range, Woolmoth Clothes brings you the perfect combination. Fine fabrics, custom design, a fantastic figure, and careful tailoring to your measure. That's Woolmoth, W-O-H-L-M-U-T-H, W-H-O-L-M. Woolmoth sounds like a bad... you know what it really sounds like, Woolmoth, to me, every time I look at it? It sounds like a Middle European vegetable related to the kohlrabi. That's Woolmoth Clothes. Terrible. Speaking of kohlrabis, we have with us here Rover, Schmover, Double Bober, Rover. The Rover 2000 TC. Somebody said, Shepard, what does TC stand for? And I will say that you... Well, only if you're over 21 will we let you know. You can send your name and address in a sealed wrapper. We'll send you the information on it. It's a little in and joke that the British have. But the Rover 2000 is a magnificent automobile. It's constructed to encase you in a transportation machine of surpassing beauty and magnificent functionality, which means this car goes, baby. It's a real fine. Have you ever ridden in one? Rover 2000? I'll guarantee you this. One word of warning. Don't allow yourself to get into a Rover 2000 and drive more than 16 feet without fear of forever being spoiled for that clunk that you're pushing around now. I'm serious. Not truly. This is a great car. The Rover 2000 TC. It's a safe machine and is about 5 years ahead of anything on the road today. Okay? If you'd like pictures of the Rover, just send your name and address to me, Fido, here at WOR AM at FM New York, and we'll send you all them pictures. All right? All right, let's get back now. Okay? Would you give me a little getting back to reality music, please? A little razzmatazz, please. Very good. Have you had the vague feeling that this is the kind of theme music that your life should have played behind it? Whereas some other guys, you know, those real big important guys with the flat stomachs and the wide shoulders and the dark blue suits, who you see all the time getting off and on the planes and the newsreels, those guys should have something like a Beethoven's Ninth played behind them. You know, the De Gaulle's of the world and all that. And here's the rest of us. Bring it up. Yes, the international fraternity, all of us are in it. That great, fantastic, invisible fraternity of universal slobbery. All right, that's enough. You keep that there. We may need... Oh, you want to hear about another terrible practical joke that I heard one time played? Well, this was done in a television station, and it was done in Cincinnati. And they had this, they had a big audience studio, fantastic big audience studio. It sat about, 750 people. You know, it was a big studio. And they had a studio band. It must have had about 15 pieces in it. And by the way, the guy who led that band, is today a big musician in New York City. You always see his name in those classy little ads that you see in the New Yorker for now appearing at the Persian Room, now appearing at the Starlight Roof, that kind of thing, and music supplied by Reginald, that sort of thing. He's a very classy society musician today, but I remember him in another day and time, I'll tell you this. And we had this big audience studio, and about five of us cooked up this terrible gag. And the studio was not in use a lot of times. We just had, we had a lot of film stuff on it, the big studio. And about three times a week, they'd have a big audience show come out of that place. And so one day, on one of the shows, one of the audience shows, one of my friends announces, he says, we're going to have a big audience show here next week at 2 o'clock in the afternoon. And if any of you would like to come and see the show, be part of this big new show that we're going to do, we'd certainly be glad to have you down. Send your name and address to Station Whoopi, and we'll be sure that you get tickets, and we'd love to have you down. Big new show we're going to have. It's going to have a band, the singers, and the whole thing. Well, we got about 5,000 requests for people to come to see this show. And sure enough, when the day arrived, we sent them the tickets. You know, we printed up little tickets on the mimeograph machine. The best gags are the ones that are really elaborate, you know, that are very official. We turned out tickets, and we had the preview time. So, we invented some real amorphous name for a show, like Preview Star Time, with the big variety band and all that stuff. So we turned this thing out. We sent out the tickets on red paper. And the day arrived, and here they all are. There's about 1,000 people all lined up, and they're all holding their tickets. And one of the ushers from the station with the blue suit, with a little monkey suit, he's lining them all up and saying, just a moment, ladies, we'll open the doors. And sure enough, they open the doors at exactly 1:30, and they all came pouring in, and they seat them all. And sitting up on the front there is the band. They're sitting up there. And they're picking their teeth. They're looking, they're tuning away. Wah, 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 wah. And you see the singer walking around. She's got the music, the whole business thing. And I am the MC. You hear about that? I'm the MC. I'm standing over there by the piano with a big smile on my face, and I'm wearing a white coat. We had a whole prop department in this television station. We had costumes you could get, and one of the costumes they had was the standard white dinner jacket, which once in a while they would use for special shows. So I put on this white dinner jacket, and I've got a black tie, and I'm standing over there by the piano, and I'm looking at my script and these ladies. And then I get up, and I say, well, we want to welcome all of you here to Preview Time, friends. And in just 20 minutes, we're going to preview this great new show that's going to go coast to coast. In just 20 minutes, folks. Coast to coast. We're going to go on the National Broadcasting Corporation Network. We'll be heard in the troops overseas and the whole thing. So, man, are you all ready over there? So they play a couple of bars of music. And I say, folks, now I want to get you all going here. I want you to get ready now. We're going to have a lot of fun today. And this is a very casual show, folks. And I want you to enjoy yourself. That's what you're here for. That's what the show is for. And I'm going to start telling some jokes. So I tell a real corny joke, like, what about the chicken that crosses the road? And they go, hey, oh! I said, come on, let's hear the applause. The band. So we started to get this crowd going. And by the time we were ready to go, it was about 2:58. When we were supposed to be going on the air, the crowd is in an uproar. I'm telling them jokes, and I'm running around. I'm wearing ladies' hats, and I got the whole scene going. And every 5 minutes, somebody in the band would stand up with a trombone and go, wow, 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 wow. I'd say, sit down, you slob. Wow, what a show we had going. Well, now it is 1:58, and I turn around, and I look up the clock. The big clock is, all right, folks, now, in just 60 seconds, we go on the air coast to coast. Now, you watch that big sign and what it says on the air. I want to hear a roar of applause. I want to hear you really belt it out, because they're going to be hearing you all the way out in California. They're going to be hearing you in New York and Alaska. So let's hear it. All set now? All right, now we've got just 30 seconds. You're already boys, let's see. And the band is sitting there all ready to play the theme, and the singers are all standing up there, and the people are looking excited. It is now 5:02. 5 seconds. 4 seconds, 3 seconds, 2 seconds, 1 second. And then the engineers, who had them all, and they had cameras, guys are pushing cameras around, you know. The engineer in there, he goes like this, he gives a big point, and on goes the red sign. It says, on the air. And then I go, all right, let's hear it now, folks. It's preview time, on the air, coast to coast. And the crowd, and the band goes, ta 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 ta. Well, the band plays, there's no business like show business. And I stand there and I wait till the music is over and the crowd applauds. And I say, well, folks, here we are now. We're right down in the heart of America's great Midwest. And let's get things underway. How about me telling you a joke? And the crowd says, right, 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 right. See, I've been telling them these corny jokes, see? Right, 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 right. I say, okay. And then I proceed to tell a joke, a dirty joke. Oh, a rotten joke. And the crowd looks. And about five guys in the third row go, holy smokes, oh, wow, hey. A couple of bums in the crowd. Hey, 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 hey. Well, with that, I said, all right now, folks, let's get the music underway. Here he comes. Here's John Chester Smith, your warbling tenor, to sing Danny Boy. All right, band, let's hear it. Ba-cha-da-cha-cha-cha-da-cha-da-cha-da-cha. And out from behind comes the tenor, and he is pie-eyed, drunker than a coot. He comes running up to the front of the microphone, and he starts singing, ah, Danny Boy, bum ya, Danny Boy, la cha da cha. Will you guys get on a beat back? La cha da cha. I said, just a minute, folks. Hold on. we're a little trouble here, a little technical problem. Let's go into our next orchestral number. Thank you very much. That was John Chester Smith, our famous tenor. Now let's give him a big hand. And the crowd is sitting there with their mouths hanging open, the drunk. And now he lays down. He sort of collapses on the piano. He says, hiya, folks. And the crowd is dumbfounded. Well, we go for about 5 minutes into the show, and first we get a drunken tenor, and then we have a fight in the band. Three guys start yelling in the band. Somebody says, oh, knock it off. Will you put me in a bag? Shut up. Ah! And the band and the drummer is arguing with the trombone player, and they start yelling. One guy pushes the other guy, and the crowd is sitting there with their eyes open. And I say, oh, that's the folks. Well, there's a very funny joke I'd like to tell you about the chicken crossing the road. Well, we go about 10 minutes. Everything is going wrong on the show. When all of a sudden, out of the crowd, out of the doorway in the back, in rushes this guy. And he's a very official guy. And he says, all right, all right, all right, all right, all right, off the air, off the air. We've just been caught off the air. I'm from NBC, and we've just been cut off the air coast to coast. This is a disgraceful exhibition. And none of you men are ever going to work in show business again. Do you hear that? None of you. You, the guy over there with the white coat, you're dead. What's your name? And over here, this singer, this disgusting bum, and you people, here you sitting all here laughing at it. This is disgusting. And he goes stamping out. And our light goes off. Instead of saying on the air, it just says out now. And I turn, I say to the crowd, well, I guess that's it, folks. We're all through. We sure laid an egg that time, didn't we? Well, let's clear up the mess here. And we carried the drunken tenor off the stage, and the band is still yelling and fist fighting as they go off into the crowd. And they led the audience out into the street. And to this day, I suspect that not one of them knows that we were never on the air. It was one of the great elaborate jokes that I've ever participated in. And I'm sure that even to this day now, guys sitting around the fireside, you know, they talk about the time they were in the studio audience when they saw the whole thing fall apart. Yes, man, I'll never forget the time. You remember that day when we went to see that wonderful show down there, WLW? That wonderful day, I'll never forget it. You know, that singer came out drunk. You wouldn't believe it. And that man told that dirty story. Such an awful thing. Well, you wouldn't believe it. A man from the broadcasting network came running in, and he said, you're all off here. And do you know none of those men have ever worked since? Are you aware that Uncle Don deliberately said what he wanted to say after he thought that the microphone was off, which he knew was on all the time? He said it. How else are you going to get on the cover of Time? You don't want to hear any more stories like that, do you? Well, listen, I'll tell you one. You want to hear another one? I don't know why I'm telling you these stories. It's kind of nutty stuff. I'll tell you, I saw a guy, absolutely. I saw one. If this guy had had a bad heart, I mean, it would have been a real bad scene. But it was in another radio station, and we had this guy on the station who was very, very tense type. He was a real tense. You know, there are some performers who, no matter how long they work, they are totally involved, tense. They sweat. The beads of sweat stick out on their forehead, and they work. And he was a newscaster. And he was one of these voice of doom type newscasters, you know, who sits in his little newscasting booth for hours before the show goes on the air, and he marks his copy all up with red lines. You've seen this type, you know. He underlines everything. And when he comes out, he says, "Good evening, Americans everywhere. Today in Washington, the President of the United States made this announcement. We are about to embark on a new program of taxation. And I ask you, President of the United States, have you consulted we, the taxpayers? And now the weather." You know, that kind of voice of doom type. And he, his eyes, boy, his would bulge out. The cords on his neck would stand out like hawsers. He'd sweat. And he was completely involved and nervous. He'd smoke 18 cigarettes. He had cigarettes sticking out of his ears, you know. He had 5 cigarettes in his mouth at one time. He had a pipe sticking out of the back of his head, the whole thing. And he's all excited. His shirt would be just dripping with sweat. And he was kind of a joke at the station, this guy. And he, boy, a fantastic voice of doom. And the announcer would always say, the announcer who would introduce him, would say, "And now, here he is, speaking to America, Fred C. Grubbage, and the news." And Grubbage would come on. "Good evening, Americans everywhere. Tonight, there is bad news. Bad news tonight. The President of the United States has announced that a new program of taxation will go into effect as of the first of next year. And I ask you, President..." Well, you know, it was a real big scene. This show was great. You know, they should have started him out with the Stars and Stripes Forever, you know, or maybe at least... there are some newscasters who become so important in their own world, they think they are, that they really secretly are mad at all politicians because they don't know why politicians keep getting headlines and they don't. The fact, oh yeah, this is what happens to sportscasters too. Oh yeah, believe me, Yankee Stadium and the clubhouse is filled with more little fat sports writers with thick glasses who envy Mickey Mantle or Bobby Richardson, or anybody else who can really hit a ball. Oh, they get bugged after a while. You know, you write so much that eventually you figure, why can't I do that, you know? And you get bugged by it. Well, the newscaster syndrome is very much like that. And I know many a newscaster whose program should really be introduced by "Hail to the Chief." You know, da, 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 da. And now, ladies and gentlemen, here he is, the dean of newscasters everywhere, the great thinker of our time. Here he comes now, Fred C. Grubbage, Esquire. Ta 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 ta. Hail to the Chief. Good evening, fellow Americans everywhere. Well, they get this voice of doom quality. I do pretty well, don't I? Listen, I could earn my living in a lot of ways, man. And you must have that imperious quality. One of the great things is to rise above your sponsors. This kind of thing where it's like, "And now, a word from our sponsor." And somebody else comes in and talks about the sponsor. You say, "Thank you. And now, we take up the situation of the Middle East. In Beirut today, it was announced by Hassim el-Hassim, an old friend of mine. It was announced by the regime under the guidance of the palace that..." Well, we had this guy. Now, you got the scene? One day, he is in there doing his newscast. And I'll just tell you what happened. It's a terrible moment. He's in there doing his newscast. And he's working. Oh, he's sweating. His eyeballs are popping. And he's going like this.
I have before me a directive from the President of the United States. It says that a new system of taxation is about to go into effect that will deeply involve the taxpayers everywhere in this fair land of ours. And I ask you, an open letter to the President. Dear President, have you consulted the taxpayers?
Well, he's in there sweating. Well, one of our salesmen walks through his studio with the hat on the back of the head type salesman. And he comes walking over, and he hits him on the back of the neck. While this guy is in the middle of his... There was an absolute rule when he's doing a show. You couldn't even come within 4,000 yards of the studio. It was like getting in touch with heaven or something when this guy was on. He was absolutely in charge. You couldn't come near. So Eddie walks to the studio, opens the door, and walks right in. And he's saying, and now I say, President of the United States, are we the taxpayers? And Ed hits him on the back and says, hey, you old son of a gun, are you still giving them that jazz, huh? He turns around. This is said right into the mic. Are you still giving them that old jazz, man? That isn't exactly what he said. He said a four-letter word that I could not say on the air here. Let's put it this way. Well, use your own imagination. He said, are you still giving them that old jazz? He turns around. He says, and I say, President... President, I say. And he looks up at Eddie, and Eddie's just sort of got that big grin. He says, and he turns to him again, hits him on the back of the head, says, give him hell, Charlie. And he walks out. Well, he continued his newscast, and he's shaking. You can just see he's ashen. His eyeballs are bugging. And he's completely thrown. I mean, it's like somebody comes over to Walter Cronkite. Oh, come on, Walt. I remember he used to run the SO station in Teaneck. Don't give me that voice of doom jazz. Cut it out. And here he's now deep in his analysis of the forthcoming election. And in these quarters, we believe that the forthcoming election will be pivotal in the history of these United States. By now, he's gotten rolling again, and he figures that if he can make a strong ending, they will forget what Eddie said in the beginning. And I say to you, the taxpayers and the voters of these United States, vote carefully. Vote carefully this time. Consider yourself. Look deep into your consciousness. With that, another engineer walks through, and this guy's a guy that always works down in the basement and does stuff with soldering irons. He comes walking through, and he stops, and he says, hey, is anybody on the air in here? Hey, listen, he's got a whole big bag of irons and soldering irons and tools. Hey, who's on the air? Anybody in there? Oh, excuse me, are you on the air? Hey, hi, Charlie, I haven't seen you. And he says, and I say, hey, Charlie, And he walks out, and this guy is white and shaken, and he looks into the control room, and here's the engineer sitting there looking, and the engineer's acting up a storm. He's looking aghast. He's like, he's going like that. Well, by the way, I might point out that this newscast was coast to coast. The guy is shaken. It wasn't until the next day that he discovered that his newscast was preempted at the last minute, that there was going to be a special broadcast from out of the Capitol, and his newscast was not heard. And they had just piped him through the studios all around. You know that he left the studio that night, and if I've ever seen a man, they didn't even tell him till the next day, if I have ever seen a man who was on the brink of jumping out of a 26-story window, either that or drinking himself to death in 5 minutes, it was this guy. He was white, he was shrunken, and his voice of doom had become a little Wally Cox squeak for the first time. Good evening, Americans, everywhere. Keep your knees loose, and that's the word from this quarter tonight. Thank you.
Gene Shepherd from June the 20... What did I say? I shut it off so I can look at the tape. June 21st, 1966, which wraps up Mass Backwards for today. I'll be back at 3:30 tomorrow morning, sitting in for Susan Brown. We'll pick up the Roy Wood story, and we'll get back to some New Wave and wrap up that as well all tomorrow here on WBAI New York, where it's just about coming up on 6 o'clock in the morning. Mario Murillo coming up with a wake-up call after an important message or two here at WBAI New York.